Near the end of the beginning of the second decade of the 21st century, a group of intrepid gamers gathered together with one goal in mind, to play quick start adventures for role-playing games and review them. Quick starts, a set of simplified rules, characters, and adventures meant to highlight and show off the rules for a specific game system. Their one goal, to recruit new players to their full game. Our heroes gather their allies and begin to master the ways of these quick starts. One of them stands forth, fist raised high, and declares they shall kick in the quick.
Still can't believe you're going with that.
On this episode, Iron Kingdoms, Dragon Age, and Eclipse Fades. Iron Kingdoms, GM Doug. Players, John, Jason, Christian, and Matthew.
So here we are for the first part of our quick starter reviews. I'm here with Doug Grulick and Jason Wright. I don't know why I was like going blank on like everybody's names. And of course, I'm John Manis. And our first quick start that we're going to talk about is Iron Kingdoms. So I'll kick it away to the GM for Iron Kingdoms, Doug Grulick. Doug, you picked Iron Kingdoms. I guess that answers the first question I was going to ask. So tell us a little bit about the game. What's the general gist of this game?
Well, it's the RPG based on the War Machine / Hordes tabletop gaming system. It's a high fantasy / steampunk setting where you have warjack casters controlling giant steam machines and casting spells at the same time. It's has some ogre and trollkin as well as humans.
And yeah, like you said, it's based off of it kind of comes from both of those miniatures games.
Yeah, the game mechanics function almost exactly like the tabletop rules. Combat is 2d6, add a number, try to hit a number. The damage is done similar.
From a GM's perspective, how easy would you say it was to pick up the game? About how much time do you think it took for you to grasp this particular game?
Well, I do play some War Machines myself, so that made it pretty easy. I kind of read over the rules, briefly reviewed the characters, kind of read the plot. I might have put an hour and a half, 2 hours into it. So it's definitely seems to be geared to run. Yeah, as if you're trying to entice your tabletop gaming friends.
Okay. I was going to ask you that, if you thought it was more of a, this is an RPG for the wargaming fans, or was this more of a...
A war game for the RPG fan?
Or, well, yeah, I was trying to think how to word that.
It's definitely, hey, we play this game all the time on the tabletop, let's put a plot to this game. That's definitely what it felt like,
okay.
Because it was definitely kind of light on the plot.
As far as the characters themselves, I think Jason and I are going to talk a little about the characters we played in general and what we thought of the characters. And of course, and then we'll, Doug, you can give some feedback into that as well, too. Jason, what do you want to say about the pre-gen characters?
Well, the pre-gen characters were really impressively done. They were multiple pages. The actual statistics parts got a little bit confusing, trying to find the right statistic, perhaps. But it included a full briefing on the character's backstory, their motivations, how they interacted with the other groups, or the other members of their group, even going so far as to give you a little bit of a tactical briefing on what some of the things that person might do in combat that would be more effective.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, too. That's one of the things I thought was pretty nice about the character sheet, was that it gave a little section that said, it didn't just tell, like for me, I was playing the sleuth or the arcane caster, and it didn't just have a bunch of numbers on there. It had that, and then in the corner it said, your character's also pretty good at this. You can cast up to 3 spells at a time. It also said, when you're making these observations or, I forgot what to call it, your perception.
Forensics.
Right, my forensics test, that those are boosted, so I can actually roll 3d6 on those instead.
Yeah, there were some some situations where there were, you know, one part of the character sheet was calling a statistic one thing, and then elsewhere it was called something similar, but not quite the same.
Right.
And it actually kind of helped that, I played War Machine, so I knew how it should function. So the rules maybe weren't the clearest on some of the spell casting.
Yeah. And really, that's the only place it seemed to really happen was on that spellcaster character that I had, when I had a few of those weirdly named or renamed stats like you were talking about.
And they kept, and sometimes they would refer to, your range is, 12 feet. And then other places, that's 2 inches.
Gotcha.
And they wouldn't always coordinate with each other.
Gotcha.
Yes, that was...
Yeah, I do remember you talking about that while we were playing the game. And speaking of why we were playing the game, let's talk about the adventure itself, because most quick starters are going to have a little starter adventure in it, and this one, of course, had one in it, which, personally, I thought the adventure, I thought it had just the right number of parts to it, sort of a beginning, middle, end kind of thing. While we were there, we were joking around how it felt like, there must have been a train station nearby, because we have all felt like we were getting railroaded pretty heavy.
Yeah.
But admittedly, in a lot of these quick starters, it's going to kind of have that vibe.
Yeah. To get the setting across, they definitely had, a page that you read out, an entire column that you read out, talking about the thick smog air from all of the coal-burning labor jacks and all that.
Right.
Which... on one hand, it kind of definitely, here you arrive at the next scene, but even at the end, they gave kind of an illusion of choice. Like, if you rescued this person or didn't rescue this person, didn't matter because the same thing happened anyway.
I like how it ended with a question of, will they get out of this once they've been, because I think they were like arrested or something at the end. Will the players get out of this? Well, it's like, this was a quick starter. We probably won't play these characters again. So.
But it definitely left a nice adventure hook for if you wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah, because I could see if somebody was jumping into this quick starter and the players were really gung-ho about it, I'm thinking, let's continue this. And then the GM would be like, all right, well, let me figure out what's going to happen to these characters. What'd you think about the adventure itself, Jason? Or the setting, for that matter?
I thought that, for a game that, came from a tabletop war game, I thought, it did a good job of trying to make sure that non-combat skills, were highlighted. There was a scene that, required some investigation. There were a few opportunities to try to, deal with an encounter socially instead of proceeding right to combat, with those two guards.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, they actually put an out to avoid combat, which these guys managed to succeed at.
And I thought that was kind of interesting for a quick start. It didn't, because most of them are, you walk to point A, you fight these things.
Yeah.
Whereas this actually gave us a choice in that matter. It said, you don't have to fight them.
But you also had that big fight at the end.
Right, which...
Unfortunately, unlike the character sheets where they describe their players' tactics very well, the suggested tactics for the boss fight at the end basically made it so the bodyguard type guy didn't get to go before he got killed.
Which is kind of a shame. I wanted to see him dish out some damage, some big damage.
I almost wonder if that's just a matter of them having done such a good job defining and refining the pre-gen characters to the point that they maybe kick a little too much butt.
Well, that could be, or it could be,
They were definitely talking. There were suggestions. Okay, this first part might take 3 rounds of combat. After that, the boss should come out, and these guys had cleared through it in a turn.
Yeah.
Although that might have been really lucky rolls.
True. I seem to remember Jason over here getting some pretty badass rolls there.
Using those scarab dice.
Using those scarab. Well, then again, I remember rolling pretty well with my dice too, which weren't scarab dice. There was those dreaded pink dice that I got from scarab that kept rolling sixes, which was kind of cool. the quick start itself, the rules, Doug, did, or the booklet itself, or PDF, did it give you a decent idea of the overall setting? And do you think that actually came through in the adventure itself?
Yeah, I definitely think it did. It was kind of railroady, but in doing so, it got, you got all the flavor text that, if I didn't know anything about the setting, I may not know. Although, honestly, I don't know. I play War Machine, but I don't know the day-to-day life of the average Joes, what that's like. So, I definitely felt, a little more into the lore of the world.
Okay. I got a nice little taste of what this particular world was, and I remember there were certain things in what you were reading to us that kind of helped stress that as well, like not like you were talking about the day-to-day kind of thing, how we were all mercenaries, and going back to this pregens, how it had each of our personalities on it, and it told us, this is how your character feels towards this character, this is how your character feels towards this character. And so I thought all of that really came together very nicely. What did you think about this quick start? Did you enjoy it? Would this make you want to check out the full game?
It definitely does interest me in the full game. Mostly from the aspect of the player characters, they all seemed interesting. They all had, not just that they all had a role and a personality, but we had the fact that the wizard in our group was also an investigator.
Right.
The troll was also a bounty hunter. It seemed like there was more depth to the characters than just, I'm a wizard, I'm a fighter, and that's something that I find interesting, character generation for a system.
One thing I should mention, one of the characters actually comes with a labor jack.
Yes, so, which is pretty awesome. So we actually got to see that in action. I enjoyed this quick start. I thought it was fun. It was definitely very different from me. I was actually telling my wife Ruby, it's like Pathfinder, but like on a very different scale because you got guns. And I was like, wait a minute, you got guns in Pathfinder? It's like, crap, you got robots, you got these.
But everybody has guns.
But everybody has these. Everybody has guns, and there's quite a few people who have these robots and stuff, which is pretty cool. And it's not as like overburdened with some of the more fantasy stuff like you get with Pathfinder to compare it to that. It's definitely, and it doesn't take steampunk, in my opinion, to that nauseating degree that you tend to get with some steampunk.
Yeah, the steampunk's definitely, cool steampunk mech battles. Wait, did I just say steampunk mech battle? What?
So what I would equate it to, if you've ever seen the anime Samurai 7.
Yes.
It was kind of along that vibe.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, it's steampunk. Yeah, there's some magic, because I think there's probably some magic in the Samurai 7. Maybe not as much heavy-handed with it. But the steampunk wasn't overpowering everything.
See, the extra RPG influence I saw was going back to, Thief the Dark Project.
Oh, wow.
Old PC game.
Oh, wow.
Because that also had kind of a steampunk vibe in a medieval setting. That's just the vibe that I picked up, but that's just my influences.
I was going into this kind of looking at how they were going to balance, briefly scanning at the player characters. There was a good range. You had a guy who had a jack, and then you've got the trollkin bounty hunter and the caster. I was really curious as how they were going to balance all of these things. Mm-hmm. In the tabletop game, they all have point systems. But, you're all supposed to be equal, otherwise you get party conflict. But, the mechanics seemed very well balanced. The trollkin didn't really have, spells or a jack, but, he did an obscene amount of damage, and, at one point I nailed him, and he just shrugged off the damage.
Yeah.
And then the caster, got to shoot three bolts of arcane bolts a turn.
That was pretty awesome, to just sling spells around like that. Are there any other little things we want to say about the game? Jason?
It actually got me interested in seeing what the tabletop game's like also.
Okay. And I know you got to actually get a taste of it at Scarab at the Iron GM contest too.
That's correct.
a couple last things I want to say about the game is, first off, the PDF for the quick start is gorgeous. It's full color. It's the artwork is pretty nice.
Yeah,
everything about it's great.
They definitely put their time and effort to making the quick start look really nice. Yeah.
And the last thing I want to say about it is why did the freaking Trollkin have, what was it, the skill that you had that nobody else in the group had? What, negotiation?
Yeah, I think it was because he negotiated by, taking his, two-handed warhammer and just smacking it into the palm of his hand.
Because admittedly, when you said, oh, my character's got negotiation, I'm thinking, sure you do. I'm going to negotiate my axe, my whatever, upside your face. That's how I negotiate.
And that's about how I did it, I think.
Yeah, the party leader definitely didn't have the negotiation that the guy who's trying to get the
boss?
Yeah, the boss. didn't have negotiation.
The boss of the group.
He's too busy trying to keep that steam jack in line.
Apparently.
Yeah. They even had a little bit about the steam jack, about how, you know, he's trying to teach it how to run by itself.
That's right.
It's amusing.
Any other last things you want to leave us with, Doug?
It's definitely fun. I would recommend it, and I want to play more.
All right, well, that's the quick start for Iron Kingdoms.
Dragon Age. GM Ruby. Players John, Doug, Christian, Clay, and Mary.
Okay, so we're here for part two of our Kick It in the Quick, I think is what we're calling it.
I can't believe you guys accepted that.
For part two of it, we played a slightly different game from the first one. The first one, of course, being Iron Kingdoms. So, Ruby, what game did you pick? What game did we end up playing?
I did the quick start for Dragon Age, the RPG by Green Ronin Publishing.
And what was the basic, or what was the general gist of this game? What was the theme, or...?
Well, it's actually based off of the Dragon Age video game, and it is considered a dark fantasy. There's still magic in it, there's still elves, but it's kind of more medieval-y feel to it, so everyone's really dirty.
And by that, you mean like everyone's covered in mud?
Right.
In your opinion, as GMing this, how easy was it for you to pick up this quick start package and get the rules for it and prepare it to run for a bit? How easy was that?
It was actually pretty easy as far as the quick start, but then I was familiar with the game itself, the video game. I played it two or three times over the last couple of years, so I kind of already knew the setting. The rules were really pretty easy to pick up, at least the ones that they put in the quick start. They had a really neat dice mechanic that I hadn't really seen anywhere else, where you roll 3d6, two of the dice are one color and the third die is a different color, and they call it your dragon die. And it has special rules on different things. But essentially, you roll your 3d6, you add all the numbers together, and then if you have a particular skill like you're trying to use, like persuasion, you add whatever ranking number that's listed there, and you might have a focus, which will give you an extra two dice as well. But and then you're always trying to meet some sort of target number that's listed.
Okay.
Other than that, mechanics-wise, there's an interesting one. If you roll doubles on any of those three dice, you get a number of what they call stunt points, where you get, there's a listing that they have that they give you in the quick start of them, that you can spend your points to do different things like knock people away, pull them to you, do extra damage, different things like that. They have it for melee and ranged, and then they also have a separate list for something with spell casting. So, and that actually is very much like the video game as well. You're doing things in the game, and then all of a sudden you're knocking people over and stuff. So okay. Overall, the whole game, the role-playing game, actually translated very well from the video game. So, kind of funny story with that is I ran the quick start, and within like 2 days, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go replay it. And I've been replaying the video game now.
The game itself, like most quick starts, had several pre-generated characters that came with it. I probably should have done this at the beginning. I forgot to mention that we had some other players who were playing it, who are actually here at the table with us right now.
No, we're not.
They're all figments.
It's all, yeah, I'm just...
don't believe the lies.
I'm making up a bunch of strange voices. That's how good I am. But I was playing a character We also had
Clayton,
Doug,
and Mary.
And we had another person here, another friend, Christian.
Yeah, who is not here right now. But he played, and he seemed to have a lot of fun. So let's talk about these pre-generated characters. In everyone's opinion, how well do you think these pre-generated characters were? Do you think there was enough put into the pre-generated characters? Did it feel like you were just missing lots of information about the characters? Or?
No, in comparison to other games that I've played, both Quick Start as well as one-shots at conventions, this one left enough open to put your own twist onto the character, but yet gave you enough background where you didn't have to go completely off of blank canvas, which meant that we could get right into the story and you could kind of make up the other quirks about your character as you go. So it was, in that respect, they covered basis of attributes and abilities, a little quick background on, you know, where you came from and what your motivations might be. And I would say that it was just enough to work with, but not so much that you feel pigeonholed into a very, very tight, other than maybe the mage.
what character were you?
I was, surprisingly enough, Clayton, the actual thief rogue. We had two rogues in the party, but my specialty was thievery, and as well as I was more of the ranged specialist in that with a longbow.
I should mention that Dragon Age in particular, both the video game and RPG, there's actually only three classes, period. There's mage, warrior, and rogue. But you can choose as a rogue or warrior, either of them, you can choose, well, I'm going to be a ranged version or I'm going to be a melee version. Magic users can choose basically if they're going to be like primal magic or if they're going to be spiritual, like a healer, or if they're going to be... there's another one that I can't think of right now. Basically, everything has three different branches you can choose no matter which class you go in. So there's not a lot of this, oh, well, I'm going to be a cavalier or I'm going to be a shaman. No, you're a mage, you're a rogue, or you're a warrior.
Yeah, I guess that's the limitation of the system. Or I guess the setting, not really the system.
The setting, more or less. Cause...
You know, my take on the pre-gens... Coming from, I guess, Iron Kingdom's pre-gen, where there was a full dossier on each character.
Right.
You got a name and a paragraph. And if I hadn't played the video game, I definitely would have no idea. You know, there wasn't anything about the setting. You know, it's very clear that this was gunning for somebody who'd already played the video game.
Yeah. I think so, too.
Because you're right, those Iron Kingdom ones, there was definitely a lot more background. There were several sheets, if I recall, that gave a little bit more background about the setting for each character.
You could play the Iron Kingdoms one without really playing War Machine, although it was definitely geared towards somebody who played War Machine. Whereas this one, other than the fact that there was sense that, Mage Joe, I got let out of the towers, and this is a rare treat, there was nothing really about how, you know, mages are secluded because they might turn into demons and
right.
Well, we got that in the background from the GM guide, right?
No, that was me because I've actually, like I said, played the game, so I gave individual information. I was like, well, here you probably don't know this about. Mm-hmm. Even in the quick start, they don't mention the background of why mages are so feared and why they're trading with the tower, and they don't mention. The only thing they did mention is. You know, everyone's like, "Ooh, elves! They're the good guys. They're the happy, fancy, better at everything sort of, you know, top echelon type thing." No, in this game, elves are basically lower caste citizens, slaves. They're treated like dirt. You know, they have derogatory names called all the time. So, I mean, that wasn't anywhere. That was the only thing that was in the quick start as far as setting wise.
So we could. Agree that there's a disconnect in terms of the background of a mage and the background of some of the towns and stuff like that from the character descriptions.
Yes.
Which left that, well, I don't know what that means.
Right.
Well, I had never played Dragon Age, the video game, before, and coming into it, of course, Ruby gave us some background, but the storyline that they gave us for the adventure, I didn't feel like you really needed... to know, other than to know the elves are slaves, but yeah. the background on the magic and all of that, it wasn't really a part of the story much. Now, we kind of, knowing it, used it to our advantage at one point, but I don't think that we had to do it that way. I think if we hadn't known that information, we would have been fine anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and it did seem to me like there were certain things where there would be an encounter and it'd be like with the owls, how you set that up and then you kind of explain to us a little bit about how that relates to the whole setting.
But at the same time, it's a fantasy game in general, so
right.
it's dark, things are attacking us, we fight them, yay! That's about it. You know.
But I guess to counter that, if without any of that fluff, what makes it dark fantasy the RPG versus actual Dragon Age, other than calling one of the die a dragon die? Yeah, there's nothing to really tie it to Dragon Age itself.
Oh, I don't know.
And see, that was the other thing. I know that you played the other rogue. There were basically two rogues,
mm-hmm.
two rogues, two warriors, and a mage pre-gens in the quick start. And you played the other rogue.
Uh-huh.
And she was actually a foreigner to these lands.
Uh-huh.
She was Orlesian versus being from Ferelden, which is
uh-huh.
where everything takes place.
Am
so
I...
there was a background there as
yeah.
well that... They have a totally different, think French, frou-frou mm-hmm. French.
And my backstory gave me a little information on
yeah.
that, not a lot.
Yeah.
Name in a paragraph. The mechanics.
I really liked
yeah,
the mechanics
were pretty
game.
Neat. I like the
yeah.
way that worked out. Like you were saying, the 3d6. And the stunt dice. Oh, the stunt dice.
Well,
I,
the stunts.
Oh, the stunts, not stunt die. The dragon die, and the stunts.
It's actually fun to come up with what you're going to do with the stunt after you've already succeeded at your hit.
Right.
Rather than, all right, well, I'm going to do this and this and this and this and this and this and this. Okay, your target number just went up by 30.
Yeah.
And so now you've got to try to beat it. Otherwise, you came up with all that stuff for nothing. Now it's, all right, I'm going to try to hit him. Oh, cool. I hit him. And I get to do some other stuff, too.
Right. So
and they ranged from you could get another attack, you could
mm-hmm.
knock them back,
which I think we used the
most. Used that one
yes.
quite a bit. Knock
we
them
were
over
the edge of a cliff.
If you've ever played a Star Wars game and have had Jedi near cliffs, you'll see the same thing.
There was like double attack.
Yeah.
I did mention that also the magic had those kind
there
of stunts
some
as
magic
well.
Stunts,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the standard stunts were skirmish, rapid reload, knock prone,
oh, the rapid reload.
Defensive stance,
yeah.
disarm, mighty blow, pierce armor, lightning attack, dual strike, and seize the initiative.
Yeah, I think I tried to do dual strike at one point, but I didn't succeed.
Yeah, and they get... You get a number of stun points based on the value of the dragon die.
Which is that odd colored die.
So
yeah.
Some of the stunts are, you know, 1 point and they have the lightning attack, I think it's 4. So you don't always get to do the really, really fun stuff, but sometimes you can just knock it back a little bit, which, you know.
Probably should mention too that while you're playing, when it's your turn, you get certain actions. You either get a major and a minor action, or two minor actions. And they of course gave you a little quick reference guide, which I thought was pretty handy having
yeah.
it out. I handed it out, each one with a character sheet. But it explains, you know, like a melee attack or a ranged attack, or if you run or defend or heal, that's all major. Whereas, you know, readying an action, moving just your pace instead of running double.
Which also came up because you can't run
and
ready your weapon at the same time. So
right.
a couple of different times where
we did have
you
a
run up,
run.
And then you're like, oh yeah, I forgot to take my weapon out. Oh, I gotta take my weapon out. Man, I gotta wait till my next turn in order
to do anything. Yeah.
But then again, it does follow
right.
the video game
it
in
does,
that way, because if you don't
so.
Have your weapon out, you gotta pull your weapon out, and you might be able to move, and now it's the next person's turn. So
yeah.
Because I was playing the sword and board character, the character with the sword and the shield. I noticed I had like a lot of hit points and a lot of armor, and I found that my role was apparently just to try to take hits.
Well, armor doesn't make you harder to hit, it just makes
right.
you take less damage.
Right, and so that was really playing into my favor. About the only problem I had with my character, anybody who gets the quick start is going to see this, you have this attribute or stat called speed, I think it is.
Yes.
and that determines how fast your character can move. And on there, and on the, on that particular one, it says the speed is zero. And it's like, so am I just sitting in a cart and people have to roll me around?
It looked like it was a
misprint. It should be like a 10.
Right. There were a couple other places in the quick start itself that were missing. Usually it was an L, so it looked like it was all those kind of one shapes. Right. It was these capital letters. So I think it was just a graphically misprinted sort of issue.
The PDF
nothing,
issue.
Nothing that you couldn't understand. Like the word owl was missing the L. But in the case on the character sheet, the speed of zero, it was kind of confusing because the type of armor you wear can change your speed. So he was in like heavy armor.
Yeah.
So we were like, well, is it really zero or?
Because it kind of seemed almost
right
feasible, but not quite.
Right.
Like maybe the rules like a little different. Maybe it's you move a certain base or your speed, but it didn't really say anything like that.
And while we're on the subject of critiquing, like the what's printed in the quick start versus, you know, the actual gameplay and stuff like that, you have starting money. You get an option to buy stuff, and there's like 5 things that you actually can afford, and there's 30 things that cost like thousands of gold, and the most anybody starts with is like 50.
Yeah. Oh, my character was broke.
Although I think it was really amusing, Ruby was reading off all the stuff that was available to buy, and is there rope? And then everybody buys rope.
Everybody bought rope.
And yeah. Did we not use every bit of that rope?
Every piece of that rope. Yeah. Twice.
Fashioned a rope bridge.
All right, well, let's get into the adventure and setting itself. How was the adventure?
Okay. Well, the initial setup for the adventure was you'd all been basically given an opportunity to make some money. And Arl called you in, who wants you to basically go meet his cousin to pick up his kids that's been staying out at the main city. And he's sending his second in charge, basically his central, along with you. And you're just supposed to guard her and pick up the kids and come back. And you'll get a gold apiece, essentially. Or a gold to split. I don't remember quite. Basically, not a huge amount, but, you know, money.
And in this case, a gold is a lot of money.
Yes, yes.
It's like, what, yeah, 100 silver or something crazy?
Yeah,
like that.
When he mentioned gold a minute ago, or 50, silver. He was really saying 50 silver.
Yeah.
So a gold is 100.
Right.
Silver, so.
And the adventure itself had an interesting little bit of a. There were some role-playing moral decisions that we kind of had to make.
Right. The scenario, the way it's set up, that there were different types of encounters. There was role-playing encounter, there was combat encounter, and there was a puzzle encounter is how they classify them. So basically, role-playing, problem-solving, and fighting.
Was the puzzle
I was trying to figure out the
bridge?
Puzzle was the bridge.
Oh, the bridge.
Was one of them, yeah.
And the gold coin.
And the gold coin.
Sure.
Yeah, that was more role-playing one.
I don't want to give away too much about the thing, because other people are going to play this, but needless to say, I think I threw everybody for a...
for a nice little loop.
You guys all thought I was some sort of goody two-shoes character until the very end.
But they definitely play up the whole dark part of the fantasy.
Yeah.
With the moral dilemma.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought they did that pretty well, as far as the adventure. Now, did it seem... To me, it seemed like... Like, a lot of the combats, especially the first two big combats, it seemed like the goal wasn't necessarily to kill and or destroy or beat up the monsters, as it was to just sort of, not necessarily outwit them, but outmaneuver them somehow.
You, actually, in the first fight, you have a chance to basically demoralize them. You know what word I'm trying to say.
Demoralize.
Demoralize, yeah. Every time you basically kill one of them, they all make another roll to see if they run away. The other two fights really don't have that, because one of them is nothing but an animal fight, and the other is the final fight, which is a fight to the end.
Yeah, but those animals were tough.
To compare, you know, first fights between quick starts, the first encounter in Iron Kingdoms was very much like, this could completely blow over really, really quickly. This is how you roll the dice, kind of
right.
A very, very...
kind of slow intro to
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I don't think that they overwhelmed you with the initial the initial fight, because the way that they set up for the number of monsters was there's one monster per player and an additional. So essentially, if three people were playing the quick start, you'd only have four monsters. Whereas we had all five people playing, so we had six total.
And we did have an NPC that was with us anyway.
But, yeah. And they don't really give clear information on if she will participate in any of the other fights other than children. I kind of made her hold back to see what you guys did, more or less. And if you needed help, that's when she kicked in.
Yeah, the NPC was another mage.
Correct.
Who was better than my character was, because she had more fancy spells.
Right. But I could never get them to go off when I tried, because I couldn't meet her target numbers. That not that they were really high numbers, they were only 12s and 14s, but I couldn't roll
shit. Rolling.
And to compare, all of mine were...
He has his headphones in.
Target number 10, and I was rolling 3d6 plus 4, which, if you do the math, that's pretty hard to actually fail. So I never actually miscast a spell.
Do we feel like they eventually gave us a pretty good idea of the setting itself? We've kind of already commented on this.
Personally,
a lot of our stuff from the setting we got from Ruby.
I was going to say, personally, having read the adventure, having played the game, and being able to compare the two, I think it did give you a nice feel for what the game was like as far as that goes.
It certainly hinted at a much deeper universe than what we were seeing in the gameplay, so it kind of made you more interested in going out and finding out more.
Which is good for a quick start.
Yeah.
You know, you want to whet the appetite a little.
We didn't have to sit for like half an hour reading box text.
Right.
To understand what was going on.
And the Iron Kingdom one did something similar to that at the end, where it gave you that open, you know, well, this is what the fate of the character so far, but where will it go from here, kind of thing.
Yeah, there was a moral twist at the end.
And I think that whole moral twist or that decision on how do you want to react to this particular setup helped also kind of drive that whole dark fantasy setting in there. Because otherwise, you know, it could have been just like, oh, look, there's some, whatever they call them, Morlocks or whatever.
Grenlocks.
Let's,
or Harlocks.
There's some Grenlocks and Harlocks. Let's just go beat them up. Beat them up, take their money.
Which we knocked them off a cliff. So.
Yeah, we couldn't really get their money.
You got the money from the last ones.
Yeah.
But the knocking them off the cliff, that was a good use of a...
Stun points.
You know, it kind of reminded me of a very simple version of the Star Wars Edge of the Empire RPG. It has a very cinematic feel. Yeah, if you're not familiar with that game, Fantasy Flight has specialized dice. There's successes and failures that cancel each other out, and if you succeed more or fail more, yeah, that's the outcome. But then there's also advantages and threats, which, you know, you can... It has a very cinematic feel where you provide cover or, you know, remove bonuses. You can, you know, apply, you know, stress your opponents, or, you know, maybe you get stressed. And it kind of had the stunts kind of very similar feel to that. You know, you can knock a guy off a cliff if he's standing right on the edge, or you know, you shot so fast you look like Legolas pulling another bow, another arrow out as like you were breathing. You know, it was very cinematic. You know, like you said earlier, you didn't have to. Well, I want to try to do this and get screwed over beforehand.
Did we enjoy this quick start? And how likely would you be to check out or try to check out the full version of the game? Clayton?
I'll start it off. I enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. It wasn't so overly bogged down with numbers and extra rules and stuff like that we were able to get into it quickly, move into the actual adventure, and have a good time with it. And being that I've actually played the video game, it sparks my interest even more to see what the rest of the RPG looks like. So yeah, I would probably check it out.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. I think having played the video game is key. You know, if I hadn't played it before, I'd probably be really into the RPG if I was currently playing it, you know, in Ruby.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I did like the mechanics.
And I liked it too, and I hadn't played the video game, and I didn't mind at all. I thought it was fine to just jump right in and play, but I've played a lot of fantasy RPGs. I've read a wide variety of fantasy genre books, so, you know, it was pretty easy to just kind of pick it up and run with it. I'm sure if I had more information, I could, and the ability to develop my own character, I could have come up with something really interesting that would have been a lot of fun to play. So yeah, I'm interested in checking it out for the future.
Had Christian played the video game?
Oh,
okay. Yeah. So Mary was the only one that hadn't ever. Yeah. When John hadn't played, but I talked about enough and he'd seen parts of it.
I guess maybe having somebody who's very passionate about the game running it would be very handy.
It does.
Yeah. To be the GM and not having played the game, I think would have been hard.
I agree. Yeah. As far as the game went, like I said, it made me go back and play the video game, but we had a copy as well in the Scarab Game Library, which I've now absconded with. Hey, Dell. because I think it's one of those games that I'll probably... I don't run much. I run Pathfinder Society stuff because it's all kind of pre-boxed and everything for me. But I think I'm going to attempt to do Dragon Age for when I don't have to do Pathfinder-related things at cons. Help a little bit. It's a game I think I can enjoy running enough that I won't feel uncomfortable, you know, because I'm always a little worried that I can't be creative enough with all these other players.
Well, test us out as often as you can, because...
So yeah, I have the starter box set. That should probably mention that. The way that Green Ronin Publishing did the Dragon Age game is they did it in a box set. So basically, everything you need to play from level 1 to 5 is in this box. And then they have a second box, which is level 6 to 11. And then they have a third box, which is... it's three modules or scenarios that you can run, and then they have a fourth little package, which is the GM screen and another scenario. So you can, if you wanted to, just run through all of the scenarios and basically level through by their box sets. I only have the first one, 1 through 5, but that's a good start for most conventions.
And I bet you they took the equipment list directly out of the box set. Because if you're up to level 5, you probably have enough to at least buy some of the stuff
stuff.
So.
Yeah, I was just really looking at the list. There was mostly just silver and copper. There was only, the most expensive thing was like 30 silver. So, but like you said, you started with only a little bit anyway.
Yeah, there were a couple things that we actually looked at box set.
The main set.
Yeah, we actually looked up the real rules.
Which one of them was the speed
of zero.
The other thing you mentioned was spell power. As we're sitting here, I happen to found that question in the quick start. So,
well, no, it was a...
It was about the stunt. What does spell power mean as far as...
Oh, yeah,
stunt?
Yeah.
It literally, I was just sitting here while you were talking about something, and I'm like... Oh, look, it explains what it means right here. Couldn't find it when we were playing it. Oh, probably should mention also the question about how easy was it to pick up and whatever.
You just did.
yeah. Anyway, I literally read the whole thing an hour before you guys showed up.
So that's a true testament to this quick start
right here, then, I guess. Right. Which is probably why I couldn't find it right off the bat. I was like, yeah, I knew I saw it somewhere in here, but...
Well, that's not bad for picking it up.
No. Maybe it was two. I don't know, because it was kind of one of those, hey, are we really doing it? Are we not? Can people meet it this time or not? And I was like, I'm not going to read it until I know, because I don't want to read it and forget it.
It is called a quick start
for a
reason, right?
Right.
So everything you need to play in this game is really in this quick start. Everything you need to play this quick start is in the quick start.
Yes, everything except the dice.
And the speed for the warrior. Which is 10, by the way.
Right.
If you play it.
So people should just listen to this particular recording before they play it. This is the way it should work. Oh, and just for the record, I enjoyed the game.
Good.
I would be more likely to play more of it, especially if my wife's running the game.
Okay. I think they have a game to run. John has so many, you know, between Deadlands and Pathfinder and Shadowrun and Earth Dawn and Savage Worlds and
Kobolds.
Yeah.
Can't forget that one.
I guess I finally found one that I wouldn't mind running.
Right.
Okay. Well,
that was our cat dying somewhere.
The cat's hacking up a hairball. That means it's time to end this recording for this quick start. So again, this was the kick it in the quick.
I still can't believe you're taking that.
For Dragon Age. We still have a few more left to go. I'm really looking forward to this Ghost of Albion thing, if we ever get mad to run that.
And we still have Leverage.
And we still have Leverage. And we still have whatever it is. Eclipse Phase. And Jason's also looking at Legend of the Five Rings, L5R. And Jason's already started talking to me about all sorts of other quick starts that he's found that he thinks would be pretty cool. And I was like, oh, let's get through the first round of quick starts first, Jason.
We'll have to season 2 of the
Yeah.
I think Jason's already up to season 5 of quick, or at least his part of season 5.
Eclipse Phase. GM, John. Players, Ruby, Clay, Mary, and Matthew.
All right, we're back with another kick it in the quick.
I still can't believe you're going with that.
I like how every time I say kick it in the quick, the first thing you react with is, I still can't believe you're calling it that.
And it was your idea.
And it was your idea.
It's a fantastic idea. It is. I mean,
that's part of the reason I can't believe you're still going with it. It's so silly.
But enough of that jibber jabber. This particular kick it in the quick, we're going to be talking about a game by Posthuman Studios called Eclipse Phase. It is the role-playing game of transhuman conspiracy and horror.
What is transhumanity?
Transhumanity basically means...
I'm still not 100% sure, and I played the quick start.
Basically, transhumanity is mankind has, I don't know if you would say evolved, but sort of outgrown or grown outside of the limitations of their normal physical body, and they've defeated things such as death and disease, and it really goes into things such as bioengineering, genetic engineering, cybernetics, robotic enhancements, and humanity no longer bound by their own physical shells, putting their consciousness into these bodies they've created through various means. And it becomes less about your character's, you know, physicality, and more about, it kind of deeps a little bit deeper, ironically, into what does it truly mean to be human when you're not bound by your human body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
Oh, basically in this game, you have some sort of body that's got some sort of a thing that you've said, oh, I want to buy this modification to this body. And your minds are all uploaded into these things called cortical stacks. They're shoved into these bodies. If something happens to this body, if this body actually dies, they can retrieve your cortical stack and put it into a new body if you want. Or if you just say, oh, you know what, I think I want to be a robotic spider monster that can shoot lasers, they can put it into the body of the robotic spider monsters.
That can shoot lasers.
It takes place in space, or it takes place in different planets that are colonized by humans. There's also sort of crazy things like uplifted animals, which are animals that have been given sentience, and supposedly there's some aliens in there and some crazy AI monsters and stuff like that, as if all of that wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. How easy was this game to pick up, and how much time did it take to grasp the rules? Well, I GM'd this particular game. And I can say, I tried to approach it kind of the same way that Ruby, the way that you approached Dragon Age. I had kind of skimmed through it prior to leading up to this, but I really fully delved into it really this week, re-familiarizing myself with the rules and such. The basics of the rules, it really didn't take much at all to pick up. The quick start has a lot of background material about the entire setting itself. And I think the players would benefit from reading that as well, but I think doing that then adds a lot more time into the quick start.
Mm-hmm.
So basically I had to read through this and then give all of you a sort of like that whole, you know, what does it mean to be transhuman? And
right.
Welcome to space, and here's some talking monkeys and things like that.
I believe it was fish.
Yeah, the monkeys couldn't talk, remember?
Right. The particular monkeys in this adventure couldn't talk, but it specifically said that. And at one point, Matt, you bought some talking fish. let's see. Kind of has a Shadowrun-ish kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Cyberpunk kind of a... cyberpunk-ish kind of vibe. But in space...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know, the dice mechanic system, that worked a lot like Battletech, I guess, would be my closest, the whole percentile deal.
Okay.
Cthulhu. It's almost identical to Cthulhu.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
See, because when I was looking through it, I was like, this is like kind of like Cthulhu because it's using percentile dice. But it also kind of made me think of Shadowrun because of the way combat is kind of broken down with the initiative and something kind of like initiative passes.
Yep.
And you have this, and you have Moxie. Who wants to talk about Moxie? No one?
I'll talk about Moxie. I'll let
you, okay.
Moxie is the mechanic where you get to kind of modify what's actually going to happen to you or what has happened to you. So if you want to just succeed in an unopposed role, you spend a point of Moxie and you automatically succeed. On a roll, you can spend a point of Moxie to flip-flop the digits in your percentile roll.
And it's actually called flip-flop in the rules.
I kind of like that one.
Yeah.
That's a neat one. I don't think I've seen that one before.
I think Cthulhu would benefit from that.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
And the only other one that we really didn't actually get the chance to use was the ignore a critical failure.
Yeah.
Well, nobody got any critical
failure.
We had
quite a few critical failures.
Oh, yes, we did.
We just decided to go on ahead and see what happened.
That's right. And it does critical successes and failures really instantly. Basically, it's like if you get the same number on both of the D10s, so if you get an 88 or 99,
mm-hmm.
then if it's a failure, it's a critical failure. If it's a success, it's a critical success. We never really ran into any situations where we could truly see what a critical success actually did.
I mean, I got one, but it was to not go insane, so...
Yeah, but it didn't make you go extra not insane. That's right, because you rolled, the double zeros at one point. Which is not only a success, but a critical success.
And the only way that he was going to actually succeed in that role.
Right.
Yeah.
So are there any other rules or any other aspects of this game that are interesting or that we want to kind of talk about and bring up?
It seemed like it reminded me a lot of Shadowrun and Cthulhu, and there's another one I mentioned when we were playing, but I can't think of it now. But it's like a bunch of different systems where they took pieces of it out and put it all together.
Overall, I felt like the rules and the mechanics for doing anything were very complicated. Like, we're comparing it to multiple games because you're actually doing so many things when you have to do an action. So the person doing the action has to make their test, and then the person opposing them has to make their test, and if they both succeed, something happens. If they both fail, something happens. It was very complicated.
How did you start
initiative?
It
took
initiative?
A long time to do.
Oh,
yeah.
That's right.
Initiative had like four steps.
Right.
And combat had like eight steps.
Right. Yeah.
And this was just for each person.
Yeah.
And while it, I guess, made it more realistic and the outcomes were more varied, I thought that it just drug everything out a lot.
It didn't seem like the actual skill tests themselves were really that hard. Like, if you were in a non-combat situation and you were like, oh, I'm going to plant this bomb, then you would just make a straight-up demolitions roll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But when we got into combat, combat's where all those skill rules got really, really weird.
I guess once you had played it for a while and got used to it and knew what you had to do each time, it would go faster. But
okay.
For the quick start, it was pretty slow.
And I think the damage aspect, actually doing damage to people with guns for a game that goes, here's a bunch of guns, start shooting at people.
Yeah.
The damage aspect of that was really, really weird.
It's a back
really
and
crazy.
Forth, back and forth, because it's
yeah.
what's the armor piercing versus the armor, then you roll the damage, and then the damage is compared
to a certain threshold,
compared to the durability.
Oh, that's right.
And to see if they get knocked down. And then it's the threshold, the wound threshold.
To see if you take any wounds.
Any number of wounds.
And then you have to roll.
To see if you get knocked down from that. And
right. Yeah.
I like the variability that it offered, like you mentioned, but it definitely did feel like it had an extra roll for every portion. Like, yeah.
And you got confused a couple of different times where I made the roll. Well, you got to roll it again. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah,
I made that will test. That will times three.
Because it was
second will test.
Yeah.
To see if you go insane, not from the initial stress, but now from the
right.
damage you took from it.
It was like, well, you take some stress damage, and now you're going to take a, whatever they call it, the mental wound.
Yeah, and then you were and then you might have a deranged for that, but yeah. you also had to roll to see whether you were disoriented, too.
Right. Yeah, I think talking about the stress part of that, I'm not sure if I like that mechanic being on here. Now, if it truly plays up the whole the horror part of that, then I can see where that would be more vital to the game. But I meant for the quick start, it didn't seem like there was that one thing with the nano swarm that seemed like it was truly horrific. But it seemed like they were making you do that stress thing like a lot for a lot of different things. Yeah.
Well, it's the only way that you can damage your cortical stack.
Your mesh brain.
Your brain. Because your brain is really the only thing that kind of travels through this whole, through the whole world.
And that was kind of complicated for me, too, because I like horror games.
Uh-huh.
But in this, I didn't really get the whole horror feel because it didn't matter if our physical bodies died. We could just reload our brain to another body. Like, in the end of the second combat, I didn't like my body anyway, and I was happily blew it up, because it didn't matter.
It's like, I don't care. I'm going to detonate this antimatter bomb. I'm taking all you jerks with me. This will solve all of our problems, guys.
But I liked my spider robot body.
But then you guys were like, oh, and it's like, oh, they couldn't retrieve your cortical stack. No.
So I didn't remember the awesome thing that I got.
So they're going to have to download memories from your last backup. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
I'll twist my arm. I'll take it.
But because you can't really, it doesn't really matter if you die, it's not scary. At least I didn't feel like it was that way.
Right.
I guess the GM could play it up more, and we were kind of
goofing around a lot, joking around,
And part of that was because of this complexity and bizarreness of some of these rules.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to bring us really... Okay, so it's going to bring us kind of to this next topic. Let's talk about these pre-gen characters they gave us. Now, my one big qualm with the pre-gen characters that they gave us is they give you 4. Now, granted, 4's not bad, GM and 4 players, but there's a lot of times where I still think 5 is really that magic number.
I don't know.
And if they had more, it would give you guys a little bit more options. So be like, I think I want to play this guy instead.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to have played it with 5 because it was slow enough with just the 4 of us.
That's true.
Okay.
Insofar as the characters themselves, though, I feel like they were good at representing the system. I don't know that they played that well in the quick start, but I felt that you had a lot of options between being a face character or being a more tech character or more of a bruiser. It covered the spectrums well, I felt.
Okay.
In other words, they didn't give enough opportunity for each type of character to shine in the quick start.
Yeah.
It was more geared towards a certain type versus all 4 of the types.
Yeah, get you the fight and fight.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said...
After they take your weapons.
killed me on that, but I'll talk about the adventure.
Sure.
And
well, as far as the character sheet went itself, for the most part, I liked how they did the skills. I liked they gave you a description. They gave you a little bit of background on the character. They gave you your gear and your other information like that. What I didn't like is the large amount of what are they called? Abbreviations?
Okay.
That you didn't know what the heck they stood for. For like COG and CU and INT and...
The death rating.
Right. And then we actually went online to look up what IR and DR meant.
Right. Because it's got aptitudes.
Right.
Which is like what? It's sort of like your main attributes, I guess you could say. And you've got like 7 of those.
Yeah.
And then you've got what?
And they're modified 6, 7, 8, 9 type of body that you're in.
Right.
Which
and
is
then,
neat.
And then
yeah.
you've got,
which is cool, yeah.
So then you've got what? 9 or 10 stats?
9 stats.
And then your character sheet's primarily taken up by all these skills, and there's like a couple dozen easily skills
now,
in there.
The skill side reminds me a lot of Riff's.
Okay.
Riff's character sheet is almost half of it is skills, and it's all percentage based.
Uh-huh.
What was the one that Tim ran for us? Better Than Riff. Dead? That was Riff's, a Riff system.
That was Beyond the Supernatural, yes. Which was a Palladium system. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't thought about that. You're right.
That was the one I was trying to think of earlier.
Because that system really is kind of geared around, like, well, yeah, you've got these things. But primarily what you're going to be focused on is your skills.
The Riff's skills is definitely this. The Riff's combat system is a little bit more D20 based. So you don't get this kind of a setup where you're using the skills in combat the same way.
Gotcha.
But yeah, big, big vibe, especially with a long list. I mean, a laundry list of
skills.
Of individualized skills, very specific on a bunch of them. You have a base stat, you have a modifier based on your body, then an additional modifier based on equipment
gear
and stuff like
implants,
that.
Yeah.
And the only thing I really didn't like is you've got these light gray colors for shading for all of the base and the bonuses and the modifiers, and then the total is in a darker color against a black background.
Well, okay.
I don't know about the color, if it had been in color. Granted, the character sheets are in black and white.
Okay. Well, and here's my word on that. The entire PDF for the quick start is in full color. And looking at the PDF, it's a beautiful PDF. It looks amazing. And all of these character sheets, full color. Everything really pops when it's on color. That being said, I had no intention on burning ink to print out this whole page. Because this whole page is like dark blue and black and red. Sure. And the characters really, like I said, they do pop when it's out on color. But for printing it out, you're right. Printing it out just black and white, it does lose a little something, and it is harder to see some of the...
Well, we lost, actually, on a couple of different occasions where we were looking at the base stats instead of the total stat on one of the aptitude
because,
for a will roll.
Because those base stats are a lot easier to see. Yeah, I agree. I agree on that.
But other than that, I mean, the gear, a description of what the body is, that was I liked it.
Yeah.
Because then it gives you an idea of how you can actually play your character, because you get your personality quirks at the beginning.
like if you're a paranoid schizophrenic character, like Matt was playing.
Or
who was the face of the group, right?
Really party got... socialite.
I'm pretty glad I didn't choose the schizophrenic. I play a little bit.
Well, they present it. It's
those.
Like, hey, he's a con man who is pretty much the face of the group.
And gets extremely, exceedingly,
like, cool.
Overwhelmingly paranoid. Under high stress situations.
Yeah. Yeah, that seemed kind of
bizarre
to me. But but yeah, you brought up a good point, Clay. There was a lot of stuff on the character sheet where at no point did I feel like, oh, I need to ask, what is this thing? Because it's either somewhat intuitive as far as the equipment and implants and stuff. We had questions on some of the skills, like we had to really look up and kind of figure out, well, what exactly does this
kinesics,
what exactly does that mean? It's like, oh, it's reading body language and stuff like that. Okay, that makes a little bit more sense.
Sense motive.
And we were kind of, perhaps we were kind of confused because there's also a perception skill on there. Mm-hmm. So, and usually you don't truly have both of those working in tandem like that.
No, we didn't get a chance to use all the skills, but then again,
but
because
there's
there's a lot of skills, then, you know, in a quick start, you're not going to have really an opportunity to get overly creative with a lot of your skills because it's still just learning the system and everything.
I was going to say, like on this character, I don't think there was ever a chance for you to use your art writing skill when you were the giant robot spider.
I could have used my academics nanotechnology, but then again, it was only a 40. So.
All right. Well, let's talk about the quick start adventure itself.
Lame.
Tell us how you really feel. Yeah. All right. Well, basically, the gist of the adventure itself is you're given some really weird veiled pretext.
You're looking
for art. You're looking for art, which then turns out to mean, oh, we're really looking for an arms dealer.
Yep.
Which then turns into this horrific experience of running away from some... what should have been some horrific experience, which leads to a jump out into space and a ship blowing up. Which then leads into the, you know, the Arnold Schwarzenegger, we got to go to Mars.
I still don't quite understand that leap in logic as far as... I know.
It's a quick start.
We have an organization that's giving us directives and what not to do it, but...
I was kind of sad not to know anyone before starting.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
That's
four
like.
Random
yeah,
people.
I agree. That was kind of a harsh way to start it off.
Especially
but.
When we
With
all have
start.
Really difficult personalities. Like,
right.
I don't think any of our characters would
okay.
have liked any of the other characters.
Right.
Yeah.
Mine was supposed to be a quiet, contemplative type person who is very social and likes new people.
What?
Yes.
Well, that's like the
I
face
was,
who's paranoid gets offended.
Exactly.
I was cooler than cool, though.
And I'm a techie who's a social media bug. And a raver.
Which isn't
Yeah, and I was
too
a
unusual,
libertarian but... socialist anarchist saboteur with very strong political opinions.
Yeah,
and German.
Yeah, your character was German. It totally seems like an IRA kind of thing.
Right.
So, and with this, you got to re-sleeve your characters and
I
go to Mars in different bodies, and you got these cool new Mars bodies.
No, I didn't like was getting
playing.
A new body and not having any choice about what that body was, and I felt like the body they gave me didn't really
mesh well.
Fit. I mean, the one I had before was just...
Was good.
So much was good,
yeah.
And then the other one was not
oh
as good.
It's like,
yeah.
It's like they did it just to do it. Just
yeah.
to show you, hey, here's something cool.
And I guess if
I
you
guess
got
was
to
part.
Choose...
Which is why they put you in a robot body.
Then
yeah.
That would be better. And I guess that's probably maybe the way it works most of the time in a regular game where you could choose to go into another body and
well,
you could do something if you had something different that you wanted to do, maybe.
Well, yeah, I imagine you have more control over
yeah.
your own character.
Well, like yours, you went from one body and then you went to a different body with the... It's like they flip-flopped what type of body you were in. Mine, they went from, like I said, this the whole background of the person is he's pretty much a for-hire type person, and he spends a lot of time on spaceships and whatnot. So the body they put me on in Mars was a robot spider.
Pretty yep. kick-ass robot
it
spider.
It was.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
get me wrong, it was great, but... It doesn't seem like that
Everybody
would be a kind of leap that
a
character, the person playing the game, would choose for
well,
that.
You said you were kind of the muscle, and your
yeah,
first character was
yeah.
kind of a fighter, and the robot spider was definitely a fighter.
Right.
My
oh,
first
yeah.
character was definitely a stealth type of character, stealth and agility, and the new body was
like, you know
was
stealthier?
Also stealth and agility, but it
you know
was also, I went from being... a woman to a little boy, and that was just kind of weird. So,
well, and I guess that's part of the stressing the whole transhumanity
yeah.
because at that point, gender.
What is gender?
Physical gender is not really a thing. It's more of a well, how'd they put it on here? The
identity and gender.
You have your gender identity.
Uh huh.
You have your sex, and you have your gender identity.
So I guess if you're into a lot of philosophical
yeah.
stuff. That might be interesting to players who want to play that kind of
Kagamatsu
kind
like
of idea
that, one, that game
yeah, yeah
but that on top of everything else that's going on in this setting was kind of overwhelming for the quick start
yeah and it yeah okay I agree with you on that but it's almost well you can tell they're just trying to show off as much as they can about the game
yeah because
yeah.
you don't want to leave out something like that and then all of a sudden somebody buys the full
yeah.
game and it's like. Oh, crap.
And they're like, what? My character could be a male, but in a woman's body and still have you know, have a gender identity of female? Or it could be just completely neuter, because your character
yeah,
was just neuter
first
at one
yeah.
Went from neuter to
went
a
from neuter,
spider robot.
Went from neuter to a male robot. The psychic sex is bot.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But as far as the adventure itself go, the adventure I felt, yeah, I do feel like the adventure was very... It lacked a little something.
Yeah.
It did kind of seem kind of like the character sheets, like they were trying to show off a little too much.
And all of it.
And try
kinda...
to cram it very in there very quickly, yeah.
But there wasn't a lot to cram in there. It was very
it was
dry.
Cut and dry, yeah.
Yeah. Except that it wasn't obvious either. It was completely scripted. We didn't have a lot of choices, but it also wasn't clear to us what we were supposed to do. And every time we changed scenes, you were like, okay, well, now you're supposed to get in the buggy and go to the deserted city to find
yeah.
more weapons. Like, oh, is that what we're supposed to do? Okay.
Oh, we're supposed to find an arms dealer. Cause
yeah, for the very first.
They told us to get some art and see if the art was suitable for public display.
But first of all, we started in four different places on the ship.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to find each other, not knowing each other, and then determine how we're going to find the art arms dealer that we don't even know
we
is an arms
know.
Dealer.
They didn't even
time.
Know it was an arms dealer. Right. Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of issues with that plot. But it all ended in a nice little
explosion.
Antimatter explosion.
Antimatter explosion.
That took out a whole abandoned place. So
yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Worth it.
I'll let you guys try out your new guns.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to try out that weird replicator thing to build a bomb. So that was kind of cool.
Which we didn't even use.
Well, I'm sure it blew up,
too. So sorry.
The explosion.
It added in an extra point of damage or two. I'm sure.
It made it go past the settlement.
Yeah, like a couple meters past it. So.
On the one side.
So, do we think the adventure gave us a good idea of the overall setting of the game? That being said, the setting of this game could be so incredibly varied.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I will say this. It does seem it's a little bit less expansive than Rifts. Because Rifts goes into multiple dimensions and multiple worlds and, you know, everything else like that. So, bring it in a little bit.
So this is just multiple worlds, but not the multiple
it's one
dimensions.
Universe, dimension, multiple worlds. Because
you would think that would just
you don't
be
know.
Enough.
You don't know where the Titans went.
That's true.
Yeah, they opened up a wormhole. You never know where those things go.
Where the aliens come from.
That's right.
Einstein, Rosen.
The aliens. They probably came out of another dimension.
So
they're going messing with the guys.
No, this isn't my typical...
Went back in time.
This
is time travel in this
thing. And to Mars.
This isn't my typical genre that I like to play in. I'd prefer... I think I mentioned this when we were playing the game. I think I'd prefer to rather read a book about this versus playing a game. But that's a personal preference for me.
Okay.
I mean, talk about the actual setting.
Yes, the setting itself sounds like an amazing story and book. But I personally don't want to play in it.
See, I don't know. I personally love the setting. I would love to play in it. I also love transhumanity concepts, although this seems more of a transhumanity, honestly.
What do you mean by that? transhumanity.
I don't know, just a lot of the transhuman themes and ideas center around the cusp of humanity reaching that point and the friction that develops between true humans and transhumans.
Whereas this
is like,
they're already
past that. We're dealing with what does it mean to be human when
there's no humanity left,
when
so to speak.
Your body, everyone has the choice to be in whatever body they want to be in, and
All right. Well, the uplifted animals and aliens. Do we think that really even needs to be in this setting? It seems like that's a bit much.
I think that this would be a very, very workable setting for a GM that wanted to take it on, do the work, decide which elements of this varied universe that they wanted to play up and focus in for their particular group of players and their particular storyline. This quick start tried to cram in everything possible from the whole game so that you wouldn't miss anything. But I don't know that... I think if you were a GM and you probably just want to make some choices to focus on a couple of things. I really liked the setting. I thought that it would be a fun setting to play in, but I personally don't think I could get past the rules. I would never be happy playing with this rules system, I'm afraid. I don't like games that it takes more than, I don't know, 30 minutes to explain the rules to me at the beginning of the game.
And that may be a little indie gamer coming out in there, because...
Yeah. I mean, I think Pathfinder is overly complex. That's about the level of complexity I can deal with, and this was way beyond that. Even just what we got in the quick start, which was just kind of a scratch, I think.
I think that the animals thing gives you kind of an option to go with either really stupid grunts, like the gorillas that we had in here, or, you know, it allows you to, you know, be a little bit more creative without necessarily having to bring in alien races if you don't want to. We didn't actually get a chance to see the alien races, but you know, how many different personalities for thugs can you really come up with before it's like,
no matter if they're
really
alien or not,
you know? So if you got something different, like gorillas with biomechanical claws
and
pistols that grunt and
Nail
are very
pistols.
Graceful in zero G. So
yeah, they made a point of that. They're incredibly graceful in zero G, but they made it seem like, but because of this, they can't talk. I don't see the correlation there, but okay.
I mean, they're gorillas. They only have so much brain.
It's like, do you want us to be able to like float around in zero G pretty good, or do you want us to be able to have a conversation? Because you're not going to get both.
I did kind of lose. There wasn't a whole lot on the mesh. My character seemed to have a lot of mesh skills, a lot of hacking. That kind of stuff, talking about the similarities to Shadowrun.
Right.
My character could have had a lot of that, but in trying to be creative and utilize some of those within this Quickstarter, there was a lot of...
Not a lot of opportunity for
it.
Well, there was the ship, but I got like one shot at it, and it started doing it on its own. And they're, you know,
because
trying
they
to
come dinged
up.
You with that. They dinged you right off the bat with that. You're one real big chance to turn on, and they go -30 penalty to try to do that.
And why did the ship turn on and fly away by itself? We never fell down.
Because it says that the person in their zoo scurries off someplace and tells the ship to.
But
before
that
or after
she
was shredded
by
the nanobots.
She actually did not get shredded by the nanobots.
What? How did she... Okay.
I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense
at all. Hold on.
Well, if we got a quarter for every time
something
happened to this that didn't make sense.
She was covered with nanobots headed away from the cockpit.
How she survived is the same reason why it went from art dealer to arms dealer.
Well, maybe...
And I read it twice. It clearly said art.
You just hit the... big I accept button and move on. I know. Sometimes it really hurts to do
just
it.
Just go, it's a quick start.
It is a quick start.
Now, if it had been like, if I was running it and that came up, I think you could legitimately say, John, what's wrong with you? Why did that happen? And I hope I would have had a really good reason for why that happened. It's like, well, it wasn't really her body, it was a drone, sure. Why not?
She was really in the cockpit the whole time.
Yeah, that's it.
She had a spare morph.
All right. So finally, oh boy. Did you enjoy the quick start?
Scale of 1 to 10?
5.
4. 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd
say 4.
I wouldn't say I did not enjoy it,
no,
but
saying,
I wouldn't
what,
say
this,
that I
it's 10
did.
Like it's 10 like this is awesome, it's better than
yes
better than sliced bread.
Okay, so
and,
you're
and
saying
one a, is what you normally flush down the toilet.
Okay, so you're saying a 4 climbing up to a 5, Clay?
4 climbing up to a 5.
What about you, Mary?
I always have fun playing with you guys, but I did not have fun this evening because of this game.
Okay, so we'll, that's a number. Matt?
I'd say 4. Like I said, I love the setting and all that, but the quick start itself was really rough.
Okay.
I'm generously giving it a 5 because, like I said earlier, it's not really my genre. I tried very hard to distinguish the lack of interest in the genre versus objectively... assessing the quick start.
Okay.
Just be honest, you gave it the extra point because you got to shoot the big gun at the sniper bot that was
okay,
away.
That was fun, yes.
Because you started off and it's like, I'm a spider bot, and I got a
plasma
rifle.
Gun.
This is much better than
but,
that stupid
the
fleshy
quick start...
body I had before.
Yeah, the quick start itself, I had issues with it. It seems like a very complex game to try and do a quick start with. There seems to be too many rules. It seemed to me every time we asked John a question going through it, he's like, I don't know. This isn't listed here.
And for, and
looking at his book,
I have stuff highlighted. I've got tabs and things because I'm like, I know this is going to come up. I need to put a tab right here where combat is because.
Yeah.
So I think for this kind of complex game, I'm not sure a quick start is the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what happens when you have zero G for your first combat.
Right. Like,
oh, that brings me up a problem with that I had with the adventure too.
Like, but I don't even really care for Shadowrun's quick start, and I like Shadowrun. Yeah. I've played
that. And I like that game.
Right.
All right. Well, my quick point about the adventure itself, I also didn't like the fact that it's like, hey, welcome to the thing. You're in the spaceship. Go find everybody. Look at your sheets. You got all sorts of cool stuff. Oh, cool. We got some guns. Cool. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to send you over here where you're not allowed to bring your guns.
Yep.
And then you're going to get into a fight.
In zero
what
G.
What the heck?
Now,
in zero G.
Is it possible they were expecting us to try to talk our way out of that? Was
there's
there
a
anything
chance you could
there?
Negotiate with Xu to try to calm her down?
No.
But
I
those
mean,
other
like,
dudes
to
are
keep
still
our guns.
Out.
Oh.
No, there was no
the
chance
robots
whatsoever.
At the
that was that was scripted in this thing. This thing, this adventure in this thing was sort of like a railroad. it was a train. You were on the train.
With no doors.
All the windows were rolled up, so you couldn't see where you were going. And it was you may or may not have actually been on a completely finished and steady track. That's probably
that is
that's
a very good
description. Because I remember thinking that too. I was like, okay,
So the final analysis is system complicated, but good setting. Quick start bad.
Quick start adventure bad.
Adventure bad.
Yeah.
The quick start. I think it makes a good book that you could read. To here's a general idea of the setting, and here's a general idea of some of the rules for it.
Yeah,
that
it
might
like
entice
great
you to.
Yeah, it was interesting read through the backstory. They gave me a lot of interesting backstory, and that was pretty cool reading all that stuff. Would you be interested in checking out the full version of the game? I think Matt would probably say yes.
The full version of the game? Absolutely. I might end up modifying the dice rolls a little bit, just taking a few out, but I absolutely want to check out the base.
So, absolutely, but with modifications.
Maybe. Depends.
All right.
I would. I'd like to read over a little bit more of the details to get some explanation for some of the things that they didn't exactly go over in the quick start.
I agree on that.
And maybe that explanation would be enough for me to say, okay, now I understand that why we didn't quite get that. And maybe it smooths it out a little bit, but setting, yes. System, maybe. I did like Riff, so I'm not really against the skills and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would probably. All
right.
No, to be honest, I would not. I really didn't like the rules system. The setting was interesting, but didn't have enough appeal for me to get me past the pain involved in the rules for me.
Okay.
And like I said, I don't like complicated games. This was way too complicated.
Here's a handful of D6s. Roll it.
What about you, Ruby?
I would be interested in reading the book. I probably wouldn't play the game unless my friends wanted to play, and then I'd probably make some stupid bruiser to blow shit up. So
now, as far as me, I have the full game already. Apparently, I accidentally somehow bought it on DriveThruRPG.com. That's a long, bizarre story that I'm not going to get into. I do not have a lot of science fiction games in my library. I have a lot of games that are based around other things. So in that respect, I'm intrigued by this because it is truly a science fiction game. It sounds like it's a lot more of a hard science game. So it would be intriguing.
He has so many other games.
But I have so
runs,
many other games.
I'm
so
not going to let him run this.
So if somebody else were running, I'd probably play it. Yeah. All right. Well,
so that wraps it up.
That wraps it up. That's the kick it in the quick for Eclipse Phase. You have been warned. Don't let your cortical stack get corrupted.
With these three quick starts having been complete, our gamers wander off into the haze of morning, vowing to return, vowing to kick in the quick. If you have comments, questions, or feedback for Kick in the Quick, please find us on Facebook under the Scarab Swarmcast, or email us at swarmcast@scarab, that's scarab.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Music for the show is provided by Midnight Syndicate. Check them out on midnightsyndicate.com.